Welcome to today's deep dive. We're setting our sights on a challenge that I know keeps executive teams up at night.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, if you are steering a growing business or trying to navigate these massive enterprise contracts, or honestly just trying to scale your operations without taking on some unquantifiable risk, you are exactly who we are talking to today.
Right.
Because our mission today is to take a pretty massive stack of research, reports, strategic playbooks on cybersecurity compliance, and just distill them all down. We're going to figure out how mid-market and scaling businesses can actually protect their data and meet incredibly strict regulatory frameworks and do it entirely without having to hire a, $300,000 a year full-time chief information security officer.
Which is, I mean, it's arguably the most critical operational pivot a growing company has to make right now. We've officially left the era where cybersecurity was just some line item in the IT budget.
Yeah, just buy a firewall and you're good.
Exactly. It is no longer about setting up a firewall and just hoping for the best. Today, having verified documented compliance is a fundamental business requirement. I mean, it literally dictates whether you can close deals, secure your cyber insurance, or even legally operate in some cases.
And to give you a sense of just the sheer velocity of this shift, let's look at the threat landscape you're currently operating in. The data we are analyzing today highlights a really staggering acceleration. So in 2025, publicly disclosed ransomware attacks rose by 49% year over year.
Wow.
Yeah, 49%. That brings us to a record 1,174 incidents. That's a massive jump. And remember, that is just the public reported chaos.
Right. And what's fascinating here is that the number you just mentioned is essentially a rounding error in the grand scheme of things.
Molly.
Yeah. The real shocker comes from Blackbaud's State of Ransomware report. It fundamentally reframes this entire conversation because they estimate that a staggering 86% of attacks actually go completely undisclosed.
86%. That's the metric that really forces a double take.
It really is.
Because for every single corporate breach we read about in the news, there are roughly six or seven more happening entirely in the shadows. Companies are getting hit, data is being compromised, and they are either quietly paying the extortion or just desperately trying to patch the hole without triggering a massive public relations nightmare.
Precisely. And for you listening right now, the reason that 86% figure matters so much is because the nature of ransomware has completely evolved.
How so?
Well, it used to be a business interruption play. You know, a hacker encrypts your hard drives, your operations halt, and you just pay for the decryption key to get your business back online.
Right, the old smash and grab.
Exactly, that's the old model. Today, the primary mechanism is data theft and extortion. The second an attacker breaches your perimeter, they are silently exfiltrating your sensitive information. We're talking client records, intellectual property, financial data, and once they have it, the encryption part is really just the final noisy distraction. They hold the data hostage, and they threaten to release it or sell it on the dark web.
Which, I mean, that immediately triggers a massive legal fallout.
Absolutely. The second that data leaves your network, you have a legally binding breach notification duty. You are suddenly facing severe regulatory exposure, potential class action lawsuits, and a complete, often irreversible collapse of trust with your customer base. And attackers are specifically targeting small and mid-sized businesses right now.
Because they think they're easier targets.
Exactly. They operate under the assumption that your governance structures and your defensive layers are just far less mature than those of a massive enterprise.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the word compliance gets thrown around constantly in these discussions, and it creates a lot of friction. I think a lot of leaders hear the phrase cybersecurity compliance, and they immediately picture this giant, tedious spreadsheet that an IT director fills out once a year just to keep a third-party auditor happy.
Oh, the dreaded annual checklist.
Exactly. But looking at the frameworks we are diving into today, it is overwhelmingly clear that treating this as a one-and-done IT project is a recipe for disaster. This has to be a living, continuous operational process.
It has to be continuous because your business is continuous.
Yeah.
Your technology stack changes, your employee roster changes, and the threat actors are certainly evolving their tactics daily. So to actually build a functional strategy, we have to break the concept of compliance down into three distinct but overlapping categories. Understanding the tension between these three is absolutely critical.
All right, lay them out for us.
The first category is regulatory compliance.
So this is the baseline legal requirement, the rules imposed by governments.
Exactly. Regulatory compliance is driven entirely by legal mandates designed to protect consumer privacy and penalize negligence. You handle European data, you are dealing with GDPR. If you are in California, the CCPA. The primary focus of this bucket is simply obeying the law. But here is the catch.
There's always a catch.
Always. Being legally compliant does not automatically mean your network is actually secure against a sophisticated attack. It just means you have met a minimum legal standard for privacy. And that brings us to the second category, which is cybersecurity compliance.
And this is where we shift from legal theory to actual active defense.
Yes. Cybersecurity compliance is focused almost entirely on the practical defense of your digital perimeter and your internal networks. This is where you find frameworks focused on active threat hunting, vulnerability management, and blocking unauthorized access. It is the real-world technical implementation of security.
And then there's the third category, which kind of wraps all of this together, right? Information security compliance.
Spot on. Information security is the broadest category. It isn't just about digital networks. It is about safeguarding all forms of data across your entire organization.
So not just the servers.
Right. Whether that data is sitting in a cloud server, printed on a piece of paper left on someone's desk, or being discussed in a confidential board meeting. The overarching goal here is maintaining what the industry calls the CIA triad.
Confidentiality, integrity, and availability.
Exactly. Frameworks like the NIST Cybersecurity Framework, or ISO 27701, live right here, they provide the architectural blueprint for your entire security culture.
So putting that all together for you listening, regulatory is the law you have to follow, cybersecurity is the digital wall you build, and information security is the comprehensive strategy for how your company handles and respects data at every single level. And true compliance means harmonizing all three of those. Because when you fail to maintain that harmony, the fallout isn't just an IT headache. It triggers a fatal domino effect.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the obvious consequences of a breach are rarely the things that actually bankrupt a company. Yes, the regulatory fines can be brutal.
And they scale based on revenue, right?
They do. They scale aggressively based on your total revenue or the demonstrated level of negligence. And yes, the post-breach litigation is a total nightmare. Class action lawsuits from consumers, shareholder derivative actions, breach of contract claims from partners. I mean, you are looking at years of legal fees and massive settlements, but those are just the visible costs.
Right. It is the hidden business killers that really threaten the survival of a growing firm. Brand damage is a massive one. We all know that consumer memory can be pretty short, but enterprise memory is permanent. Losing customer trust leads to a sustained compounding revenue decline. If your core value proposition involves any level of reliability or discretion, a publicized data breach destroys your primary market advantage overnight.
And that brand damage bleeds directly into the second hidden killer, which is the complete loss of enterprise contracts.
This is huge.
It represents a tectonic shift in how B2B commerce operates today. Enterprise procurement teams and vendor risk committees are absolutely terrified of supply chain attacks. They know that the easiest way into a Fortune 500 company is through one of their smaller, less secure vendors. Consequently, they now demand exhaustive proof of security alignment before they will even sign an NDA, let alone a master services agreement.
Yeah, anyone listening who has tried to close a mid-market SaaS deal recently knows exactly what we're talking about. You get handed this 200-question vendor risk assessment spreadsheet. And if you cannot demonstrably prove your compliance with recognized security frameworks, you don't just lose the bid. You are disqualified before the conversation even starts. You are locked out of enterprise revenue entirely.
Which is an incredibly frustrating reality for a company that might have a brilliant product, but an immature security posture. And the third hidden killer just compounds this: cyber insurance denial. Historically, companies leaned really heavily on cyber liability insurance to just bail them out of a ransomware incident. But insurers have taken catastrophic losses over the last few years due to the extortion economy we mentioned earlier. Underwriters are aggressively tightening their standards.
They aren't just taking your word for it on a simple questionnaire anymore.
Not at all. They demand forensic evidence of active risk management controls. If you do not have documented compliance, robust endpoint visibility, and tested incident response plans, your premiums will skyrocket, your coverage will be drastically reduced, or your renewal will simply be denied. And if an incident occurs and the post-breach forensics reveal, you aren't actually maintaining the controls you claim to have on the application.
They just deny the payout.
The insurer will deny the payout entirely. For a smaller enterprise without massive cash reserves, that denial is an existential threat.
Which brings us to the actual standards you have to map to. The alphabet soup of U.S. compliance frameworks. If you're operating a business, you already know these acronyms. But what is crucial now is understanding the overlapping friction they create and the specific burden of proof each one demands. So let's look at the big five highlighted in the research. First up, HIPAA.
The Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. If you are anywhere near patient data or protected health information, this is your baseline. But it isn't just about encrypting a database. HIPAA demands administrative safeguards, physical security protocols, and incredibly rigid breach notification timelines.
And a lot of the friction here usually comes from third-party vendors.
Right. Yes, if you provide software to a hospital, for instance, you also bear the weight of HIPAA compliance through business associate agreements.
Makes sense. Then you have PCI DSS, which is for anyone touching the payment ecosystem.
The Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard. This one is really unique because it isn't a government regulation. It is enforced directly by the major credit card brands and acquiring banks. It requires stringent network segmentation, continuous vulnerability scanning, strict access controls.
And the penalty for messing that up?
It is immediate and brutal. You face escalating fines, higher per transaction fees, or the complete revocation of your merchant processing abilities. For e-commerce or retail business, losing the ability to run credit cards is the end of the line.
Wow. And for the tech and SaaS leaders listening, SOC2 is the unavoidable giant in the room.
System and organization controls too. While technically a voluntary framework, it has become the absolute bare minimum requirement for B2B technology providers. A SOC2 Type 2 audit evaluates your controls over a prolonged period, usually 6 to 12 months, focusing on security, availability, and critical concepts like processing integrity.
That processing integrity piece is a massive hurdle. It isn't just about keeping hackers out. It is proving to an auditor that your software does exactly what it claims to do, consistently, without any unauthorized alteration. If you process payroll, you have to prove the data goes in and comes out perfectly every single time with a verifiable audit trail.
Exactly. It's proving the machine works as intended. Then we have the NIST Cybersecurity Framework. While not inherently a law for private businesses, it is universally recognized as the gold standard for structuring a defense program. It provides a common language for identifying risks, protecting assets, detecting anomalies, responding to breaches, and recovering operations.
So it's foundational.
Yes. If you want to build a security program that can eventually scale to meet any other regulation, you start by aligning with NIST.
And finally, CMMC. If you want a piece of the massive U.S. Department of Defense supply chain, this is your reality.
The Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification. The DoD realized that foreign adversaries were bleeding their intellectual property not by hacking the Pentagon directly, but by hacking the thousands of small subcontractors that build parts for them.
Supply chain again?
Exactly. CMMC enforces graduated security requirements based entirely on the sensitivity of the data you handle. And unlike older frameworks where you could simply self-attest that you were doing the right things, CMMC requires formal, rigorous audits by certified third-party assessment organizations for any contract handling controlled unclassified information.
So what does this all actually mean for the executive team? You are staring down an 86% hidden threat rate. You are facing the potential loss of enterprise contracts and insurance coverage. And you have to map overlapping, highly complex controls across HIPAA, SOC2, NIST. The traditional enterprise-level solution is just to hire a chief information security officer to manage all of this. But for a mid-sized or scaling business, that presents massive, often insurmountable hurdles.
Because the traditional CISO model is fundamentally broken for the mid-market. First, there is the sheer financial reality. You are looking at a high six-figure compensation package, plus executive bonuses, equity benefits. That single salary could consume a smaller firm's entire security budget for the year.
And that is assuming you can even find one. There is a highly publicized skill shortage in the cybersecurity industry right now. You cannot just take your brightest network engineer and give him the CSO title.
No, absolutely not.
A CISO is a specialized executive role. They have to translate deep technical risk into business strategy for the board of directors. Finding someone with that hybrid skill set is incredibly difficult.
And retaining them is even harder. Because of that scarcity, executive security talent is constantly being coached by larger enterprises with deeper pockets. Growing businesses invest massive resources into recruiting a CISO, only to have them leave for a Fortune 500 company 18 months later, taking all that institutional knowledge right out the door with them.
Which is exactly why the strategic pivot moving through the industry right now is the virtual CISO, or VCISO, model. It is fractional executive leadership, and it completely solves the core dilemma. For organizations that desperately need that high-level strategic oversight but cannot justify a permanent executive headcount, the VC ISO provides the exact same architectural guidance, board reporting, and audit preparation on a flexible, scalable basis.
And the strategic advantage of a VC ISO isn't just cost savings, though obviously preserving that budget to spend on actual defensive technology is a huge benefit.
Definitely.
The real advantage is the breadth of intelligence they bring. A full-time internal CISO only sees the threat landscape targeting your specific company. A VC ISO is actively managing risk across 5, 10, or 15 different organizations in various industries. They see the emerging ransomware tactics, the shifting audit requirements, and the latest enterprise procurement demands long before an internal hire would. They bring that collective, real-time intelligence directly to your leadership team.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the materials we are analyzing do not just pitch the VC ISO concept. They lay out the exact operational playbook a VC ISO uses to transform a chaotic IT environment into a verified, mature compliance posture. Let's walk through how this actually works in practice, beyond the theory. It all starts with the reality check, the risk assessment, and gap analysis.
This is always step one. A VC ISO comes in and conducts a brutal, honest evaluation of your entire data footprint. You cannot protect what you don't know you have.
Right.
So they map out exactly where your sensitive client data lives, who has access to it, and how it flows through your third-party applications. Once that asset map is clear, they run the gap analysis. They take your current reality and lay it over the required framework, say SOC2 or NIST.
And this is usually where smaller businesses realize just how far behind they actually are. It highlights every missing policy, every unpatched legacy server, and every overly permissive access right.
It is a sobering exercise, but it's totally necessary. The VC ISO takes those glaring vulnerabilities and translates them into a prioritized, actionable roadmap. They aren't just telling you that you are failing, they are charting the exact path to remediation based on your actual business risks, not just some theoretical best practices.
Which leads directly into step three, establishing the policy framework. Because compliance isn't just about buying software, it requires documented governance.
Correct. Hmm. But a massive mistake companies make is buying generic policy templates, changing the company name, and leaving them in a shared drive somewhere. Auditors see right through that. A VCSO develops policies covering identity and access management, acceptable use, remote work protocols, data retention, that are actually tailored to your operational reality. They create rules that your employees can and will actually follow.
But policies without enforcement are basically useless. That brings us to step four, the technical controls, putting the actual safeguards in place. And this is where the technology advantage really shines. We've talked about the shift toward data extortion, and the research specifically highlights a fascinating technological countermeasure here, BlackFog's ADX instinct.
Yes, the focus on BlackFog is highly relevant because it represents a paradigm shift in how we handle these technical controls. Traditionally, companies relied heavily on antivirus or endpoint detection tools that try to identify malicious software as it enters the network.
Right, checking things at the door.
Exactly. But attackers are constantly modifying their code to bypass those inbound filters. BlackFog utilizes anti-data exfiltration technology. It flips the defensive model entirely. Instead of just worrying about how the attacker gets in, it focuses relentlessly on stopping the data from getting out.
Which neutralizes the entire extortion model. I mean, if they breach a server but cannot actually pull the sensitive client records out of your network, they have no leverage. There is no data breach to report and no extortion demand to pay.
Exactly. Anti-data exfiltration tools monitor the outbound network traffic continuously. If a compromised endpoint suddenly tries to push a massive encrypted payload to an unauthorized server in another country, the technology severs the connection instantly.
That's incredible.
It is. Furthermore, from a compliance perspective, this provides deep, granular visibility into endpoint activity. When you sit down with an auditor for your SOC2 assessment, you aren't just handing them a policy document. You are showing them the real-time telemetry, proving that you actively monitor and restrict unauthorized data flows. It fulfills the technical defense requirement and the rigorous evidence requirement simultaneously.
That's a huge win. So once those technical controls are humming, the VC ISO moves to step five, establishing the monitoring and reporting rhythms. Because, as we established, an auditor wants to see that you are maintaining this posture 12 months out of the year and not just scrambling the week before their visit.
Right. The VCISO sets up the continuous oversight mechanisms. They define the key performance indicators for your security program and provide structured, jargon-free reporting to the executive board. This demonstrates the critical element of executive accountability that regulators really demand.
And finally, step 6, they build and test the incident response plan. Because even with the best controls, you have to be prepared for the worst case scenario. If a zero-day vulnerability hits your network at 2.8 a.m. on a Sunday, you cannot be trying to figure out who has the authority to take systems offline or when you need to notify your legal counsel.
Exactly. The response plan defines the chain of command, the containment procedures, and the strict regulatory notification timelines. But a plan on paper just isn't enough. You have to validate it.
Which brings up some of the really practical questions the research addresses regarding how modern companies actually execute this without grinding their operations to a halt. For instance, testing that incident response plan. How do CyberRange platforms fit into a modern compliance strategy?
CyberRanges are essentially highly realistic, simulated training environments. Instead of just talking through a hypothetical breach in a conference room, your technical team and your leadership engage in a simulated live fire exercise. They practice detecting and containing a ransomware attack in an isolated environment that completely mirrors your actual network.
So it's like a fire drill, but for the network.
Precisely. And from a compliance standpoint, running these simulations provides irrefutable evidence to an auditor that your team is continuously trained and that your response capabilities are actually effective.
Another massive friction point is the sheer administrative burden of audits. Gathering logs, pulling access reviews, it just exhausts internal teams. The research points heavily toward automation here to fix that.
Automation is no longer optional if you want to scale. Modern compliance platforms integrate directly with your cloud infrastructure, your identity providers, and your security tools like Blackfog. They automatically pull the evidence, map it to the specific controls required by NIST or CMMC, and flag any gaps in real time.
That saves so much time.
It does. It turns a chaotic, manual evidence-gathering scramble into a streamlined, continuous dashboard. It reduces auditor fatigue and drastically lowers the billable hours you spend on an assessment.
When a growing company is vetting new vendor tools to help implement these controls, what should the executive team be prioritizing?
You evaluate any new tool directly against the specific compliance frameworks you are targeting. You must look beyond just the marketing claims of stopping hackers. You need to ask, does this tool provide the granular logging required by PCI DSS? Does it enforce the access controls mandated by IPIA? Does it integrate seamlessly with our automated compliance dashboard to support our SOC2 readiness? Because if a tool doesn't actively reduce your audit burden by providing clear, verifiable evidence of its efficacy, it is honestly just adding operational noise.
There's an incredibly actionable playbook. So distilling everything we've unpacked today, what is the core takeaway for the leaders listening? The fundamental message across all these strategies and frameworks is this. Compliance is an act of leadership. It is not an IT chore you can delegate and just forget about. Whether you leverage the strategic power of a VCSO or build an internal team, it requires visible, ongoing executive ownership. But when you execute it correctly, compliance ceases to be a cost center. It transforms into a massive competitive advantage. In a market paralyzed by supply chain vulnerabilities, showing a verified, mature security posture builds deep trust. It accelerates procurement, it secures your insurance, and ultimately it wins you business.
This raises a really important question, and it is something I want to leave you to mull over as you evaluate your own organization's posture. We started this deep dive with that jarring reality that 86% of ransomware attacks go completely undisclosed, hidden from the public eye. Simultaneously, we've seen how enterprise procurement teams and insurance underwriters are putting supply chains under intense, unforgiving scrutiny behind closed doors.
The pressure is mounting.
It is. So if enterprise clients are already demanding exhaustive third-party risk assessments, and the vast majority of the actual threat landscape is currently operating in the shadows, how long until a company's real-time, verified cybersecurity compliance status becomes as public and widely scrutinized as a consumer credit score?
Wow.
And if that day comes tomorrow and your company's operational compliance score was suddenly broadcast to the open market, would your current security posture win you business or lose it?
That is an incredibly powerful paradigm shift to consider. A public compliance credit score dictating your market viability, it absolutely changes the urgency of this entire conversation. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Take these insights, keep questioning the resilience of your own security posture, and we will catch you next time as we unpack another crucial topic.